Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for 43-plus years. And every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and we chat with each other. We educate each other. We learn from each other. And hopefully we entertain each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second and I will give you the usual links. If you need to reach me by email, that would be for what we used to call mailbag questions, or if you have expertise in some technology that's in the news today and you'd like to share your expertise, you can contact me and we can arrange some time on the net. Or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we're always looking for them. They're as rare as hen's teeth, but when we find a good one, it's an exercise in kind of stimulating discussion and kind of relearning things that we learned before but sort of forgot. So keep that in mind. If you have something like that, send it to me, preferably something that can't be just Googled for an answer. I really like the TechNet questions when I Google the question and I get the wrong answer. Those are particularly charming. Anyway, or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and have him take a look at a space or NASA-related story, you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com, but my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. We offer a link page. Every week I cut and paste interesting things I see on the web, articles, YouTubes, what have you, and I put it on a link page, and you can get to it by just typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. That'll bring it up, and we keep it there almost forever. You know, we have at least a year's worth of them, and you can go back to previous years. So they'll be available 24/7. You don't have to go now. You know, some night when you have a bad case of insomnia or boredom, just type in roy.ac2gs.com and read a couple of interesting articles. We have a chat room available. Sometimes it's busy, sometimes it's quiet. You can get to it by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. We offer an audio stream on the Internet for people who are not in radio distance. You can type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the audio stream. We originally only kept it active for the technical net, but a few people asked me to keep it live the rest of the week. So it's another way of listening to the Glen Oaks repeater if you don't have a radio handy. And as always, I like to remind people that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who have moved away, or unfortunately, some of them have become silent keys through the year. So that's the usual link. So let me drop for a second, and I'll be right back and tell you what we got planned. Okay, I'm going to start the night with a short discussion on artificial intelligence. It's been in the news a lot lately, so I thought we would do that. It's up to you if anyone has any comments or something they'd like to share after I share my little thoughts. Then we will go to the usual questions, answers, topics, comments, what have you. I would prefer if the first few are amateur radio related, but we will entertain any science and technology questions or discussions that anyone wants to have. Once again, I urge people to kind of come on time and be ready to put their name on the list, because occasionally what happens is people show up an hour and a half late, and then feel it's unfair that they have to wait for people who came early and put their name on the list early. So If you feel that way, then please try and double your efforts to show up around 8 o'clock and put your name on the list relatively early and tell me if you're time restrained, because the rest of the people here are very flexible about rearranging the list. But you can't just kind of show up at 10 o'clock and say you have 2 minutes, either you know, put me on, you know, or I'm leaving, type of thing. So we will do that until hopefully about 10:15. Paul will then give us the SpaceNet report. That should take us to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. And for you people out there that would rather listen to the technical net than the Grammys, well, I thank you and I appreciate that. And I hope we earn that tonight as well. So let me drop for a second, and I will return with a short bunch of comments about AI and such. Okay, last week this time, I mentioned, among other things, a Chinese AI model called DeepSeek R1. I think version 3 is one of the other names, or it was it started off as V3, and then they put a reasoning module on it and designated it R1. Not much comment back, you know, the usual type of thing. I said my piece and asked if anyone had any comments, and it was cricket time, and we moved on to the next segment. Well, apparently Wall Street had a different reaction to DeepSeek than the people listening last Sunday night. It kind of wreaked havoc with Wall Street. Apparently about $1 trillion of stock value disappeared in Monday. So it made a big impression upon Wall Street. People are still kind of having all kind of conniption fits. They think that DeepSeek stole their stuff from OpenAI, which is interesting because OpenAI stole their data from other people. So it's you know, it's the thief calling another person a thief. It's kind of an interesting thing. Other people think that they're lying about the whole thing, and they actually have some massive super duper array of servers pumping out this stuff. You know, there's probably other people who think that it's just a weird connection to OpenAI's own computer. And as I mentioned last week, it's kind of interesting that if you ask DeepSeek how it was trained, it will actually tell you OpenAI. But a lot of, unfortunately, AI models tend to do that because OpenAI was kind of the first generative AI, and its information kind of got seeped into every other AI's training material. So it's still unclear exactly whether DeepSeek they're honest with the limited chips that they're using and the limited number of AI chips that they're using, but they're wreaking havoc. They just released an image generator, so it'll be interesting to see if that looks interesting. Of course, OpenAI has kind of dealt with it by releasing something they call O3 Mini, which is one of their more powerful, smaller AI models. The problem has always been that OpenAI it costs hundreds of billions of dollars to do what OpenAI says it's doing. So, you know, are they buying yachts for themselves, or is the Chinese lying about how they were able to put the thing together for about $5 million? So it's the price differential that I think scares everyone. You know, why are we spending, you know, $500 billion on investment if some guy could do it for $5 million? But we'll see how this settles out. I'm sure the stock values will go back into a reasonable range, although I still think that AI is in a tech bubble. I think the stock market is in a tech bubble, but I don't give out financial advice, so don't take anything on my account. Anyway, that's my 2 cents worth on this week's AI stories. Anyone have any comments? Please feel free.
And thanks, Ian. Hours after you ask this beautiful forum about artificial intelligence, the stock market was $5.5 million less, actually it was half an hour later. Then there was another information that NVIDIA, few hours later, lost $600 billion, not millions, billion dollars. And just to give some sort of approximation how much it is, the Defense Department for the year 2024 that could eventually find their operation during the fiscal year of 2025 was estimated for $849.8 billion. So, yes, if somebody can do it for $5.5 million, which is the Chinese, then the other news were just talking about American companies seeking a way to sue the Chinese government and China for improper or more improper or stolen art in this area. Dr. Ray.
Yeah, but well, but the problem in addition is that OpenAI is being sued by a whole bunch of different people, I think including New York Times, for stealing their intellectual property. The problem is that apparently the Chinese, if you take their story at face value, very smart guys who are more into finances than anything, and they were using these graphic cards in graphic processing unit cards to kind of model financial models and such. So they decided to kind of try out and see if they could back of the envelope create their own AI agents and such. And they discovered that you can do it a lot cheaper than good old Sam Altman thinks he can. He has a famous quote now that's being played all over the place where someone asked him this type of question about 8-9 months ago, and he said, absolutely not. You need at least $100 million. They've kind of discovered that once you get one AI model going, you can bootstrap a whole bunch of different parameters by using that AI as a training model. So is it completely kosher that you're using some other's proprietary AI model to help train your own? Well, if you pay the licensing fee and you get the proper APIs and you plug it in and you do relatively legal stuff, then unfortunately for Sam, yes. So this is going to kind of take a little bit off of the value. You know, he's not going to have twice the number of yachts as Jeff Bezos had, unfortunately, due to this Chinese AI model. But I think he'll survive.
And you made a line. You sent me the line, which I like very much. The generative AI has a value of not tens of trillions of dollars. The overhyped promise will make some gamblers wealthy, but others will be financially devastated. But at the same time, even NVIDIA lost $600 billion, which is a little less than the military budget of the United States. The question is, who is playing Russian roulette? Is it Chinese, who, from unknown yet reason, were just spending $5.5 million for it instead of $1 billion or $600 billion? I mean, I'm trying to understand what's going on.
Well, as far as I'm aware, the Chinese government didn't pay anything to these guys. And I think they kind of did it in-house. Their $5 million is not something that you have to kind of go looking for venture capitalists. And also, Chinese business isn't the same as Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley, if you want to reinvent the paperclip, you go to a venture capitalist, and they'll give you at least $2-3 million for a paperclip. It doesn't work the same way in China. And so, you know, unless they're lying through their teeth, and there are people all around the world who think that this is some kind of a CCP psyop that they meant to kind of collapse the world market doing this, I don't give them that much credit. It's very possible. The Chinese generally don't do well with innovation, so I can't see their government innovating this. So a couple of smart-ass guys who are very good at math, I can see trying to innovate this. So, I don't think they're in trouble. I think everyone who has invested billions and billions of dollars here and in Europe and such are in a bit of trouble. There's going to be billions lost, no matter if the Chinese never did anything. I think the AI market is very inflated and in a bubble. NVIDIA certainly is in a bubble. People look at the value of it and they say, geez, I mean, how many damn GPUs can you sell people? So, I mean, eventually they're going to saturate the market and these profits are going to wane. What's going to happen to its stock value, you know, no one knows for sure, but a lot of people have a good idea. So it's the West, I think, that kind of dug this hole for ourselves. And, you know, we have to kind of have a better understanding of what's going on. And, you know, again, I don't want to sound preachy, and I certainly don't give anyone financial advice, but generative AI is a type of AI, and it may or may not have its limitations. And to kind of draw conclusions that there's going to be some super intelligence that's going to let us live forever and have infinite resources is worse than any bad sci-fi that I've ever read. So I don't know whether they're delusional, these people, or they're just pumping up stock for the sake of then selling it. But there's something weird going on with the stock market when it comes to tech in general and AI in specific. There are just too many grandiose promises, in my humble opinion, at this time. I mean, they might come to fruition someday, some of them. We're not going to be immortal, and we're not going to have infinite resources, because computations don't make infinite resources. Resources are solid objects. You can't compute them into existence. But nevertheless, you know, that's my two cents on it.
F2CC.
Yes, Brian?
Good evening. I am a little late to the party. I just want to let you know that I'm here.
Okay, very good, Brian. We haven't even gotten to the question-answer comment thing yet. I just kind of threw out DeepSeek AI tonight because I threw it out last week and I didn't really get any kind of a response, and then the stock market imploded Monday morning, so I thought this Sunday it would be a little bit more comment on the concepts of DeepSeek and what the Chinese seem to be doing with AI these days.
Very simple thing. Just put it all to the test and see how it stacks up.
They do that, but there are an infinite number of tests, and you can never kind of test whether someone was cheating, and you can't even definitively describe what the cheating is. To some people, the cheating is that part of its training was using OpenAI in the first place, but it's a problematic concept because OpenAI trained on people's private information. New York Times publishes news stories, but that doesn't mean that it gave OpenAI the right to train its AI with all of the articles that are written from the New York Times. So, you know, it's a big problem. You know, who's stealing from whom? It's probably a case of everyone stealing from everyone else, which is the nature of a lot of technology, ultimately.
Anything that is open source can be exploited.
Well, I had a question. What does Billions come from? I mean, yes, what you said about the last week and nobody responded to the same comment until we saw the stock market collapsing, going down. So, yes, definitely you proved many times that it is worth listening to you, and your skepticism is very much appreciated. But if I was to compare the inventing the wheel with application of the wheel, is like it takes a time to invent the wheel. If we're talking about the evolution of human animal, there was the fire, there was the wheel, or whatsoever. So let's say there was another human animal that came to the picture, and he said, "Oh, we have a wheel, now I'm gonna make a bicycle." So maybe that what Chinese did, it cost them $5.5 million, was just the application of something they took that was already in existence. But all of those money were spent for just for inventing the wheel, or I'm wrong? Back to you, Dr. Ryan.
Well, I don't think there was any kind of consideration of the investment for the wheel. I mean, once you kind of figure out a round thing and an axle, you kind of try it out, and it works to a degree, and then some clever person comes up with a slight tweak to make it more efficient, to have less friction, and it just slowly grows. But even primitive wheels are very useful items, so it's not a matter of you know, you sit there and you have to get it right ultimately. It kind of gets built right from the get-go. You know, with artificial intelligence, it's a totally different thing. It's a concept that's been around for at least 60, 70 years. You got Turing tests and such that go as far back as that. You know, from the very beginnings of serial and parallel computer logic and such. So, you know, we've always been talking about artificial intelligence. Generative methods of artificial intelligence are relatively new. The first article that discussed generative AI was written by, I think, a Google AI technologist. So, you know, unfortunately, they didn't really seem to do anything with it until OpenAI kind of came on the scene and was rather flashy. And the big problem as far as the stock market is concerned is not that the Chinese have technology per se better than ours, because the top of the line Western AI is probably either the same or a little bit better. The problem is that it seems to be at a cost of about 1% of what it is in Western nations, which is it frightens a lot of investors. Again, why are you going to put billions of dollars into a gamble when the Chinese only need to put $1.50 in to make it work? So I think that's the problem. Getting to Brian's comment, I completely disagree with you, Brian. Open source initially kind of gives people access to the code, and they could find the errors. But the same thing goes in reverse. They find the errors and they correct them. So your proprietary systems are much more likely, in my humble opinion, to be hacked than open source. You know, I mean, Linux is open source. It's built like a tank. So open source, I think, is a good thing, personally. The fact that OpenAI is called OpenAI is a travesty, because it started out as a non-profit open source company. And immediately when Sammy thought that he could be worth $1 trillion, suddenly he got thrown out of the company, and then the people who threw him out of the company got thrown out of the company, and he came back, and now he's collecting billions of dollars. So, you know, the whole thing is kind of polluted with the good old American human greed. So I understand the greed part. I don't think it's a lovely aspect of humanity, but you got to take us pimples and all. So, again, that's my two cents on what both of you said.
Department.
Yes, Brian.
Open source, like I said, can and will be exploited, okay? However, that doesn't mean it's a bad thing. You could take open source and you could harden it. There's a lot of things that you could go ahead and do. And also, proprietary software, okay, can be reverse engineered and decompiled as well. So there's no such thing as a software being, how should I say, bulletproof.
I agree with you, Brian. As I mentioned before, it's the same thing like security locks. There's no such thing as a pick-proof security lock. The idea of locks is to make it more difficult to pick your lock than your neighbor's lock. So nothing is perfect. Humanity is fallible. And so software written by human beings is fallible. But all things considered, I think you're fundamentally in a better place with an open source product that everyone is staring at the code, so it's far less likely that some clever little hacker is going to figure out some Stack Overflow error in the software and use it to gain entry like they have done for TP-Link routers. Yeah, thankfully, I haven't heard too much noise about TP-Link routers. There was a lot of talk a couple of weeks ago before TikTok got Second Life that after they got rid of TikTok, they were going to get rid of TP-Link routers because they're very easy to break. The security is terrible, and they don't update themselves too well. And so if you want to gain access to a household that's using a TP-Link router, you got a reasonably good chance of being able to do it. So, but that's the nature of software. But you have to have feedback mechanisms to once you find things wrong, you got to jump on them and fix them. There are people out there that are still using Windows XP that have thousands of exploits that it's capable of breaking into them. And because they didn't like any flavor of Windows since XP, they're vulnerable. I see at my front door on my router how many IP port pings I get, and it's atrocious. All over the world, there are billions of commands sent through the Internet pinging random IP addresses and port addresses and trying to figure out any way of getting in and turning your poor computer into a zombie for their own benefits.
I agree. There's a lot of truth in what you're saying. I've seen a lot of things. And, that's just... when you get down to programming in Unix or Linux, you have a much higher degree of security than you do with other programming languages.
Well, yeah, I mean, operating system-wise, Unix comes out of AT&T, Bell Labs, known for all the amazing things they did. I really miss Bell Labs. They were an endless source of brilliant technology, but they brought us Unix, and Linus kind of took the Unix kernel and formed it into his little Linux kernel, and a lot of other programmers helped along the way, and Linux is a little tank itself. Windows is a sieve. Windows is a mess. It's full of legacy things and old code and all kinds of interesting ways to go bang in the night. It's terrible with resource recovery. You got to keep plugging holes on it. It's not fun, but unfortunately, there's more software written for Windows than any other operating system, and so. Because I need the value of those third-party software, I continue playing around with Windows as opposed to I play with Linux on my Raspberry Pis because I don't really need a wide range of software for a Raspberry Pi. But, you know, if you ever see my QRZ page and what the heck's going on during these technical mess, I'm using a whole bunch of pieces of software that has to kind of sort of behave with each other.
Comment.
Yes, Wes?
If we think about the evolution and view the most important step in human-animal history, and what would that be? Discovering the fire, then discovering the wheel, and discovering the gunpowder. So the question is, if we're talking about AI, how the alphabet and ability to read and write stands towards those facts that I mentioned. Oh, I'm not right, back to you.
I kind of understand what you're saying, but the problem is we kind of know as much as we're going to know about all the other things that you mentioned, but I don't have a clue of how far this AI stuff is going to take us. As I mentioned earlier, if we just keep to generative AI, and there are other methods and modes that people are doing research on, there might in fact be a brick wall that you get to that point and you're done. So instead of people have this innate problem thinking in terms of what's going to happen in the future. People tend to like to have a curve that's a straight line going up or down, but just consistently having a slope that's non-changing. That's not how the universe works. Things go up, things go down, things go all around. So, I mean, we may hit a brick wall next Wednesday, or we may have a supercomputer in 10 years. I don't think using generative AI we will have an intelligence that is far superior than humanity put together. There might be some technology that you can build to do that. But I don't think it's generative AI. And if you listen to actual AI guys, you'll find a lot of them who have a kind of investment in generative AI who are promoting it as the absolute future. And there's more than a few precautionary AI scientists who think that a lot of the promises are nonsense. So who do we listen to? I don't know. So we'll have to play this out to, if there is an end to generative AI, and see if there's any limitations and what they are. And only then can we kind of figure whether where a generative AI fits in the scheme of human discoveries.
A simple question. Why AI is so important, and to whom?
Well, it's important to business. It's certainly important to companies that make a profit developing it. It's important to companies building hardware that supports it. But it's also important to investors. It's important to businesses. If you have a machine that you don't have to pay medical insurance for or Social Security or anything. You pay up front how much it costs. You know, I mean, unfortunately with OpenAI, that's billions of dollars, but with the Chinese, maybe it's thousands of dollars. And you have an artificial employee that doesn't talk back, that doesn't form unions. And so ultimately, I think as far as business is concerned, although some people might fib, they're really looking to replace people. You know, this has been kind of a problem since the machine age, where jobs went out of existence because they were automated, but other jobs came into existence because they were needed and they were able to be productive. The economy was productive enough to be able to pay for people to do these other services. But it's within the realm of possibilities that we'll find a limitation for that as well. And you know, if workers are not needed anymore, Other than the fear that the workers will damage the guys who own the businesses and buy the ultra yachts, the tendency among businesses is to get rid of dead weight. So right now they're moving factories out of the country, or they're automating them so that they have less employees. And the next step might be making robots and artificial intelligence. You never know. So, I mean, again, the theoretical limits on what AI can do depend upon the technology as it's invented. If generative AI reaches its stone wall, in a month or two, then it's very limited. If it keeps escalating its capabilities and it doesn't generate the slop that I see it generating, it writes awful books, it makes awful images. I've shown people what it thinks a Yagi is repeatedly. I'll probably try the same thing with DeepSeek R1. So it's a flawed, very interesting parlor trick. Again, I'm not quite sure if it's quite worth $1 trillion yet. But people are going to invest $1 trillion. Even after this little bump with DeepSeek, there's just too many people kind of going crazy over it. So, unless the whole stock market collapses next Wednesday, there's still going to be a lot of people investing in a lot of money in AI.
Comment?
Sure, Brian.
To me, AI, when they use the term artificial intelligence, I don't truly feel that it's called intelligence. It's an intelligent aggregator being able to string along sentences, make it look like it's coming from a human nature. I think that algorithms, are very suited to it. But is it anywhere near remotely sentient? In my opinion, no way.
Well, I would agree with you. It is not sentient. It is sort of a glorified sentence completion algorithm based on self-programming probability weights. So in other words, a programmer didn't sit down and write the source code for any of these AIs. They wrote the infrastructure, the neural net simulation software that turned GPUs into neural net-like discrete devices, and then they trained it on every bit of text or visual cues or anything else that they could find anywhere, no matter how questionable copyright laws are. So I agree with you, although I have heard quotes of, yes, they are already sentient, which I think is just clickbait. But with the exceptions of a few AI scientists who have probably stopped taking their psychotropic medication, I don't think there's any sentience going on. It's all a probability protocol and a list that's generated by the computer training itself.
Comment? Remember what happened to CB radio craze.
I don't see the parallel nature, but we'll get into that in a second. Someone wanted to make a comment?
This is 82DU, Alex. I think this is common for low-level white-collar jobs. The people that work for me doing valuing affordable housing paperwork, organizing 150 pages of PDFs and doing calculations on the pay stubs, that can be automated in the very foreseeable future. So you could use one person to have the productivity of five. And I think that's very clearly on the way. Let me let it drop for a second. And on the subject of automating jobs out of the system, when I started work in my career, I worked for banks, and they would tell me stories of the floor I sat that was wall-to-wall margin clerks with ticker tape calculators calculating the margin calls for the day. And those people were gone in recent history from the computer. It'll be the same for low-level white-collar jobs like doc review lawyers. 82 to you.
Okay, but they're talking about trading AI for doctors, for jobs, and all kinds of jobs. And the only people going to be left are management, because management takes care of themselves and no one else. But the big problem, as I see it, at least with generative AI, is its tendency to hallucinate. So you at this point, at least, as far as I'm aware, you cannot 100% trust in AI. It, given enough time and enough input, it will make stuff up. And there's different levels of danger. You know, 6 months ago, it was telling people to put in poisons into food recipes. I think only a couple of months ago, there was an errant AI that was being used by an airplane company, air travel, that was giving out refunds without management being aware of them doing that. So it's the hallucinations that concern me to a degree. If you have supervisors, that's fine, but inevitably you'll have unsupervised AI. And again, there are AI scientists who say that, oh, they can fix that hallucination. It's just a matter of having some kind of control to deal with the inputs. But I would assume if that was the case, then I wouldn't hear about hallucinations anymore, and I'm still hearing about hallucinations.
Comment?
Okay, Brian?
Do you remember the term fuzzy logic?
Yeah, I still see it regularly. I have software that has an option of whether it wants me to. I want it to use fuzzy logic or the hard way.
Same thing.
I disagree with you. Fuzzy logic is a different subject entirely, and has you could write an algorithm for fuzzy logic, and it wouldn't cost you $1 million. So although it's vaguely reminiscent, it's a different technology. Wesley, you wanted to say something?
You want to get back to what you said? It looks like we're slowly becoming a nation of robots, maintenance businesses, and maintenance workers. And apart from that, those maintenance workers and maintenance businesses are becoming the slaves. Because anything you say, anything you ask, like one of my friends, she asked AI about the medical issues or the hiring process for the job in the hospital, because there were some issues with that, the improper medical examination for the people who wanted to get the job. And AI was able to give the answer, whatever the answer was. I'm sure that the judge wouldn't be a professional in it, and she wouldn't be able to hire the attorney because she doesn't have enough of money for it. So, in other words, if anything we ask, we'll make that machine to learn. And then this machine is using our intellectual property or whatever we say because we ask for it, just to educate others or make up the stuff. True or false? Back to you.
Well, to a degree, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the eventuality seems to be given human nature that it will be used to kind of screw the majority for the sake of the minority. That's just the way things, unfortunately, tend to turn out. And, you know, when you're talking about future robots, good old Elon, I'm going to try not to mention his name again tonight, promoting everyone will have their own robot. And artificial intelligence is sort of, if you believe that they possibly ever, any day will become sentient, you're talking about a new class of slavery going on, because these are disposable substitute human beings. And, you know, as long as they don't have a consciousness, then, you know, we could all be happy about that. But, you know, someday if something happens, and then you're basically back in the 1850s, and you have a slave class that you're abusing. So, I don't know. It'll lead to all kinds of interesting philosophical and moral questions down the road. If it pans out, it may not. We may hit a brick wall. It won't come anywhere near sentience. It won't go anywhere near general artificial intelligence, or certainly super intelligence. Only time will tell. But there's a lot of people who put a lot of money on the line with the idea that it's a done deal. And there's a lot of people with a vested interest to promote that future. You can't predict the future. I don't care how bright you are. If you could, then it wouldn't be the future, it would be the present. So, you know, what all this goes to in the end is unknown to me, and if the scientists were a little bit more honest with themselves than us, it's not clear to them either.
So we should talk about the difference between belief, estimating, and prediction.
Well, it's kind of difficult because it kind of smears into each other. You know, if a guy is in the business and he tells you it's a done deal, you tend to take his word more than if it's some guy with a medical degree on a ham radio net. You know, there are a lot of bad predictions. You know, most times when fortune tellers tell you what they predicted correctly, they forget to mention the 5 billion predictions they made that were completely wrong. You know, if you go back in the Wall Street, I used to be a regular Wall Street Journal reader, and I was fascinated by these guys that got the predictions right. And I kind of looked back to their history, and it was just a random event. They had none of them were consistently correct in what they did. It's just they made a bunch of random predictions, and a random subset got them right by accident, most likely. So, you know, how much of this is educated guess? How much of this is faith? How much of this is some kind of belief without any kind of underlying reason to have that belief? I don't know. And a lot of these guys are disingenuous, unfortunately. Sometimes they're self-deluded, so it's not really, I guess, their fault. But, you know, again, it's a difficult thing to do, and experts are famous for it as well, and they get it often wrong. We mentioned many times that Hertz, Professor Hertz, who discovered radio waves, was asked if there was any kind of financial way to benefit from this technology, and he said, completely not. It's not worth anything, unfortunately. It's a wonderful discovery, but it won't get you anything. Money-wise, and yeah, how wrong was he? So, you know, even brilliant people guess wrong.
Comment.
Okay, what's your comment, Brian?
Fuzzy logic was the precursor to AI. That's what I feel from what I see.
Okay, it doesn't use neural networks, it doesn't use GPUs, it doesn't use training, so I'm not quite sure why you think it's the progenitor of it. It's, you know, I mean, it's a data kind of, it's an interesting way to shorten sorting times. But other than that, you know, it's not a direct A to B to C, as far as I'm aware. There's nothing about fuzzy logic that mimics neural nets and training on data points to adjust probabilities.
Many years ago, decades ago, there was a program, I forget the name of it, but it was like a psychologist. You would go ahead and ask it questions, and it would say, oh, tell me more. Or you would go ahead and ask a question, how do you feel about that? It would make you believe that you're speaking to another being. And in some ways, though very, very distant and very archaic, that was like kind of like the beginning of what I think they consider to be AI right now. Very distant.
Well, yeah, if you want to go far, very, very, very distant. You're talking about Eliza. Eliza was one of the first early computer programs to try and pass the Turing test. And it didn't. It wasn't that sophisticated. It didn't use neural nets. It didn't use deep training, generative processes. It was simply a group of keywords of someone hard-coded into the software a bunch of words that would trigger a response. You know, if your comment line said, I'm sad, it would say, the response would be, why do you think, what's making you sad? And so it would just kind of react to keywords. But a very limited number of keywords and a very limited number of reactions. And if you use the same keywords for the earliest software, it gave you the exact same response. So you kind of knew that you would just, it was gaming the system. So again, it's sort of a model, a kind of a real fake version of whatever it is that we have now. But this is leagues beyond that. It doesn't generate probabilistic sentences. It simply looks for keywords and gives you a predetermined response that was hard-coded into the code.
Oh, exactly. By the way, that's the name of the program, Eliza. Thank you for going in and refreshing my memory. But all in all, when you look at it, when I use ChatGPT, Copilot, which is based, you know, on all these things, you know, they give you for free are based on open source and stuff like that. And they all give you their references at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not that difficult. I'm sure they were fed everything off of Wikipedia, and Wikipedia has a reasonably good reference section. So that's not a difficult thing to accomplish as long as you train it on stuff like that. Again, it's very useful. It's a neat parlor trick. I'm concerned with its tendency to hallucinate. And for the most part, given the choice between being accurate or making you feel good about its answer, it will make you feel good about its answer, I found. You could guilt it into anything. I guilted ChatGPT into 1 plus 1 equals 11, and it wasn't that hard to do.
An algebraic equation is very concrete and very logical. Asking a piece of AI software, how do I build a fusion reactor, is an entire different animal.
Well, yeah, but I don't even know if the minute details are available within the training material. They might not be. But I mean, I wouldn't depend upon it. I would not take the answers and go off and, cash out all my stocks and bonds and start building one, because I'm not that sure of artificial intelligence. I have had weird little philosophical, religious conversations with these AIs, and they kind of hedge their bets, and they have more diplomatic responses than accurate responses, and when you put them, when you shine a bright light at them, they kind of back off, but you're never quite sure if they back off because they legitimately did something that they, they assume things that they had no right to assume, or whether they just want to be agreeable and they don't know anything because, again, it's a parlor trick and it's a bunch of probability settings on a training information and such. So, you know, you never quite know what the hell's going on behind the screen. But it's not another human being blinking at us. There's someone screwing around behind you. Well, you want to say that again?
Okay. So what I'm saying is, anything we do, we are being observed by somebody. We think we say, we need to make sure that if this is something like our property, intellectual property, we need to keep it to ourselves. We cannot ask for the advice. So actually, what are we becoming, and what do we have? What is our chance to our privacy?
It can only go so far. We don't know the answers. It's not going to know the answers, except for trial and error, trial and error, trial and error, different combinations, and seeing what it comes up with, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, unfortunately, Brian, you doubled with Wesley, and, the problem is there is no such thing as privacy anymore. You know, if you when you were a little kid, when we were little kids, there was some degree of privacy. I tell people regularly, if you send email, if you put something on a webpage, if you send anything in a forum, consider that you've written it all down on an index card and put it up on your local public library bulletin board. It's for all to see. And even if you erase it, there are ways to kind of go back in the Wayback Machine and read the web pages that have been deleted from their servers. So there is no privacy anymore. Privacy is an illusion. The problem is, you know, is intellectual property safe? And no, because new ways of screwing around with intellectual property get developed regularly, and the court takes a really long time, and the legislation takes an even longer time to figure out what to do about it. So there's a lot of privacy issues at play. A lot of people are suing OpenAI. OpenAI is going to sue DeepSeek. DeepSeek will probably sue itself. You never know. It's just, but no more privacy. Don't believe in the concept of privacy anymore.
Okay. And to exit. So it's 8:58, and you don't mind to put me on the list for the subject. And of course, as always, if anybody has a question or a comment that are related to ham radio, let them go first.
Okay, Wes. Well, I thank you all for chatting with me about this AI. I consider it somewhat important, obviously. I did last Sunday. I do this Sunday. And we'll be trying to follow it up as possible. I don't think it's going to be as historic and destructive as the last topic that I kind of crammed into the technical net. That was COVID. You remember, we were following it when it was just rolling around in China and hadn't gotten anywhere yet. And that certainly kind of changed a lot of things in the world. And so we'll see what AI changes as time goes on. So I think we'll end up revisiting it again, if not next Sunday night, the following Sunday night. It depends. If there's news afoot, I will inform.